The fake news wars that we're experiencing right now are not going to end soon.
Terry Mattingly on his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference, making the case for news discernment.
We're actually seeing a war to define what is and what isn't news. This whole thing is about the purpose of journalism and whether the classic American model of the press, with its whole emphasis on balance and fairness, is going to survive the internet age. What we'll be talking about is where savvy readers can go to get their news. We're also going to ask, what happens to American public discourse if we all keep on clicking on news sources that only tell us what we want to hear?
You can meet and hear Terry Mattingly June 9th and 10th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, just look for the Making the Case logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call 618-223-8385.
Judge Gorsuch has not had occasion to rule directly on a case involving Roe. However, his writings do raise questions.
For a judge who likes every outcome he reaches is probably a pretty bad judge, stretching for policy results he prefers rather than those the law compels.
William Paul Young is an extremely dangerous Bible twister who's not bringing to you what Scripture says. He's bringing to you a theology crafted in his own heart.
Northern Michiganders love Issues Etc.
Summertime in northern Michigan.
It isn't very often that a columnist from the right and columnist from the left or someplace in between agree on something, but this is one of those times. A liberal columnist has connected the dots between the religious decline in America and President Donald Trump's election. That's something that's actually been observed before by more conservative columnists. That means it's probably something worth looking at. We're going to do so with Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard here in the first few minutes of this hour of Issues Etc. Welcome back. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Mark Hemingway is with us. After that, we'll be talking with Dr. Paul Meyer about the completed renovation of a shrine in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Not just any shrine, but the shrine that actually contains the burial spot and the resurrection spot of Jesus Christ. That'll be our conversation in a few minutes. Then we'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson with Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel. We'll be talking about the Lord's Supper in Luke's account. That's a big account because that's the one that, if we look at the similarities between Paul and Luke, Paul in 1 Corinthians on the Lord's Supper, he's leaning heavily on Luke's account for his teaching on the Lord's Supper. We'll talk about that with Pastor Tom Baker. You can join us with a question or a comment over the course of the next hour, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, tweet @issuesetc, and the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about a liberal columnist connecting religious decline and Trump's election, Mark Hemingway, a regular guest, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, and author of a recent column titled "Liberal Pundit Says Lack of Church Attendance Gave Us Trump." Mark, welcome back.
No, glad to be back.
What problem does Peter Beinhart identify in his recent Atlantic piece?
Well, he says that politics are becoming increasingly bitter, which I think we would all agree with. And, you know, he's concerned about the sort of lack of ideological and moral direction in terms of how these things shape our political debates. And interestingly enough, Beinhart, being a liberal Jew, associates this with the decline in religion in the country, which is something that a handful of prominent Republican and conservative critics have been banging on for a while. Ross Douthat of the New York Times in particular has been, you know, really hitting this home for months now. But it is shocking to see in a liberal publication like The Atlantic, a liberal columnist saying exactly the same thing, but coming at it from the other side.
So take it apart for us. How does Beinart do the math on this?
Well, he he cites a fair number of studies and things like that, in terms of a lot of the stuff that you would expect. He talks to Brad Wilcox, who I don't know if you've had him on the show before, but he studies family formation and other related issues at the University of Virginia, I believe. And, in general, talks about how when you cease to identify with, a religious worldview or, even a political worldview that's based around sort of a Judeo-Christian form of morality, without that kind of mooring, pretty soon you start identifying with things like ethnic identity or nationalist identity, and you end up in a totally different place than American conservatism, which was kind of unique in that way. If you look at, what passes for conservatism in Europe, it's very much a blood and soil nationalism. It's not a sort of principled, grounded in natural law and rights conservatism that defines the modern conservative movement that, to a large extent, Donald Trump represents a break from that. He's much more of a populist. He's much more of what Republicans used to be in certain ways before the rise of Bill Buckley and Irving Kristol and people that very much shaped the modern conservative and Republican Party around a morally based political ideology.
I'm thinking about Ronald Reagan, Barry Goldwater kind of conservatism. It sounds like neither Beinhart nor Douthat are willing to say that this is in that vein or even kind of a stepchild of that kind of conservatism.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. this is kind of a complicated and sort of interesting issue from a historical perspective because I think a lot of people get it very wrong when they look at the right and its relationship to the state in this regard. So, for instance, in the liberal telling of things, which is to say the predominant telling of things, is that all of the modern sort of political rifts are all come out of the civil rights movement in the 1960s. And race does, of course, has had a profound effect on American politics. But if you look at sort of the history of it, it's kind of interesting because concurrent with the civil rights movement, there was also a rapid expansion of federal power in the 1960s. And that led to, and then, of course, there were the school prayer decisions by the Supreme Court. And there was a real sense among conservatives that the state was really trying to crowd out sort of people in the private sphere and sort of like threaten their beliefs, and then to some extent you had the threat of communism, which was, seen as godless and a threat, from outside. So the modern conservative movement was very much organized around the idea that the state was going to be threatening to people's families and their personal beliefs, and that gave it very much a religious underpinning. And it goes if you look at the history of this stuff, for instance, the constituent mail over anger over the Supreme Court school prayer decisions was much bigger than the reaction that Congress got from constituents over the Civil Rights Act, for instance. For a lot of reasons, I think prayer in schools is, a dicey proposition from a religious standpoint, because you don't want the state necessarily endorsing religion. But as an organic institution, people really saw that the faith in their private community was being threatened. And that, I think, is much more of an animating principle, more directly so among conservatives than, say, race is. And this just isn't something I think that people understand about the modern conservative movement.
If this is kind of the religious landscape that at least two pundits on arguably different sides of the political aisle are recognizing, in your opinion, are they both onto something? And what does it say, if we can then kind of project out this religious trend, what does it say about the future of politics in general, especially presidential politics? Does it get worse than it has been recently?
Right. Well, I definitely think they're both onto something. I mean, I think it's absolutely, true that this is something to be, worried about. I think it's Ross Douthat that it says that, if you didn't like the religious right, wait till you see what the post-religious right is going to be like, when you have a movement that's not, grounded in any sort of, overarching Judeo-Christian morality. And I think that is, certainly worrisome. However, I would also point out, though, that as interesting as Beinhart's column is, he's still very, very much an outlier in this regard on the left. Part of the reason why we've ended up with this sort of Trumpism is people felt that they were at a disadvantage because by you know, hewing to certain notions of morality. They were losing political battles because, you know, they were, you know, trying to uphold honor and integrity when people on the left, who had embraced secularism decades before conservatives, were, you know, sort of fighting, you know, unfairly. And I think that people felt like they had to, you know, take the gloves off in order to, you know, save themselves. But the question is when you have two, you know, sort of opposing factions that are supposed to be running the country, and neither side has any, you know, is bound by any sort of higher principles, you know, where does that get you? I'm not sure that gets you into a very good place. But I don't know. I mean, I was heartened by the fact that Beinhardt did seem to recognize that this was, you know, as alarming as the new developments with Trumpism are, this is predominantly a problem on the left. And he didn't shy away from some sort of controversial opinions. Like, for instance, he noted that part of the reason why the civil rights movement in the 60s was effective was that it was very much, you know, a part and parcel of, you know, of the moral authority of the church. You know, Martin Luther King, of course, was, you know, a man of God. And, you know, this had a big effect on things, whereas, say, the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, completely rejects all of that sort of, you know, the moral authority of the church. And as a result, a lot of people have criticized it for not being as persuasive to white America because it doesn't have that same sort of moral authority and instead has an overtly revolutionary, you know, angry spirit to it. You know, that's their right as a movement. Just the question is do those kinds of movements unite people and get us to a better place, you know, in issues that we need to, you know, work on, like race? I'm not so sure. I mean, I think that, you know, having some sort of shared morality that governs our debates is helpful here.
There, I think, people on both sides of the political aisle before the election were worried about, and I'm going to use the word very carefully here, Mark, fascism, small s. It's a word we've all had to relearn again. And there are people who have noted, as much as the left warned about a post-Trump fascism, the behavior of groups like Black Lives Matter and other student groups and things like this sure look like fascism in terms of free speech and freedom of religion and things like that. Is that something that either of these pundits would see as just a flash in the pan or something that's going to strengthen politically?
That is a really good question. You know, I don't think we're, you know, quite there in terms of, you know, capital F fascism, but certainly around the margins, a lot of these things do look like they're sort of trending in that direction. Whereas to say that, I mean, there's a very much a sense of unease in this country, I think, and people want something that they can rely on that will, you know, restore order, that they can put sort of absolute confidence in. You know, that, of course, when you have those sorts of attitudes, you know, the desire for strongmen, the desire for, you know, laying down absolute rules is really profound. You know, I think as Lutherans we can speak freely that there are inherent dangers in that sort of draconian legalism. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think there are certainly elements of Trumpism and the sort of blind adoration toward Trump in certain pockets. I mean, and I'm not denigrating people who voted for Trump. Obviously, I think people have complicated reasons for it, but there are certainly people that think that he is this wholly unique creature that can deliver us. Certainly on the left, if you look at the way that the left has embraced, you know, shutting down speech that they don't like, it certainly does reek of fascism as well. I mean, I think we're a long way from having to worry about that in this country, and fortunately we still have very strong institutions to guard against that sort of thing, and I don't see them crumbling anytime soon, but, you know, we certainly have to be a lot more on guard for those tendencies than we have at, you know, any point in time in my life that I recall.
Could this religious decline that both Douthat and Beinhardt notice, could it have an effect down the line of rebounding? That is, Roman Catholics, who are probably the largest single group, religious single group, of active voters, saying, look, it's time to reconnect with the church, to listen to what the church has to say, to begin to respect again the moral authority of the church. It's a little harder to say of evangelicals because there's not a lot of unified authority out there, but there's got to be something parallel to it. What do you think?
Well, this is a really good question. I think in general, nostalgia is a dangerous thing. You know, this country has enjoyed, for the most part, a very sort of a honeymoon period since the end of World War II, both culturally and economically, which is not to say we haven't had our troubles during those times and haven't had major challenges, but it's been a very good extended period for, you know, any sort of, you know, empire of its type in human history, to the extent that you would consider American empire. But so we have to think perhaps of recent history as more of an anomaly in terms of the hardships that we faced. And if you look at the history of America, we've seen, as our troubles have ebbed and flowed, we've also seen religious revivalism ebb and flow as well. So I think that there's certainly a distinct possibility that there could be a big revival of religious faith in the face of some of the more serious challenges we might face in the future, and certainly there are elements of the Christian church in this country that are, you know, incredibly strong, and more than that, I think that, you know, challenges like the present moment hone people's faith in ways that are very positive. Maybe there are fewer believers these days, but the ones that are committed certainly are stronger and more capable of defending their beliefs than, the average believer would have been, you know, even 10, 20 years ago. So I you never know what challenges God has in store for us, or, you know, what God's plan is. But at the same time, I don't think that there's, you know, any reason to abandon all hope. But, you know, we also have to, you know, take it upon ourselves as, you know, believers and citizens to behave in a moral way ourselves and do what we can to take care of our communities and do what we can to ensure that our politics remain, you know, morally centered.
Mark, I've also heard people on the right and the left both pining for good old-fashioned, broad-minded, tolerant, truly tolerant liberalism. Could that actually come back?
Well, this is a good question. I think that there are definitely elements on the left that are horrified by some of the extreme things we've seen on campuses in particular. Charles Murray, I don't know if you recall that incident a couple of weeks ago where he was one of the, you know, most brilliant sociologists alive, but he's written some controversial things in the past, but he's very much a sort of respectable academic. Tried to speak at Middlebury University, and he got shut down, and there was a riot outside, and one of the professors at Middlebury was sent to the hospital. She doesn't agree with Charles Murray on anything. She wrote a wonderful New York Times op-ed defending free speech, and I think that, you know, increasingly there are liberal elements of liberal academia and people that are sort of at the ground zero of dealing with this problem of illiberal liberalism, as it were, are hearkening back to a more classical form of liberalism that does value, you know, free speech and things like that. So I think that there's a germ of that that's building, but I think we've got a long way to go before we can, come together and reaffirm these classical liberal values on issues like speech and religious freedom.
Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard and author of a recent column titled "Liberal Pundit Says Lack of Church Attendance Gave Us Trump." You can read it and all of his columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Mark, thanks.
Thank you.
Mark will be joined by his wife, Molly Hemingway, at the Winter Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November the 10th, and Saturday, November the 11th in Houston, Texas. It'll be our second conference in 2017. We'll also be hosting our annual Summer Making the Case Conference, June 9th and 10th, here in Collinsville, Illinois, about 15 miles east of St. Louis. Attendance for both conferences is limited to 400. Find out more and register by calling 618-223-8385 or register at issuesetc.org. On the other side of the break, Dr. Paul Meyer joins us. We're going to talk about the completed renovation of a shrine in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre.
Did you know that you can listen to our 24/7 talk and music stations using Amazon Echo? All you have to do is say, "Alexa, play Lutheran Public Radio."
Lutheran Public Radio.
Or, "Alexa, play Lutheran Talk Radio."
Lutheran Talk Radio.
Own thing, you know, this recognition that unrighteous mammon
Lutheran fail, music, Lutheran talk, anytime, day or night on Amazon Echo.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us.
O Lord, open my lips.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Make haste, O God, to deliver me.
Morning chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.